Hey, it's Doug here. This is an interview with Vivi Tan about quitting her job as a badass engineer to pursue graphic design and change her lifestyle. You might know Vivi from her work with Personal Finance Club or her very popular Instagram. You might have seen her at some Phi conferences as well. By the way, Personal Finance Club is a great follow on Instagram too. They have some courses and you can save 20% with the discount code MILEHIFI. And courses these specifically make a great gift since if you're listening to this, you're probably pretty advanced. However, if you want to educate some people in your life, it is a great gift, so it's worth checking out. We are an affiliate, so we might earn a commission if you sign up. And by the way, we interviewed Jeremy Schneider, the founder of Personal Finance Club, in episode 122. He's a good hang, so check out that episode. And if you happen to bump into Jeremy, he's a really nice guy. Personal Finance Club also branched out and started Nectarine. And Nectarine connects you with the nation's best advice-only advisors with clear upfront pricing. There's no sales pitches, no commissions, and there's no products. And I believe it's an hourly situation. This is not a paid pitch or anything like that. It is a good fee-only situation. So it's worth checking out if you are interested in an advisor. It's a pretty cool business model. We actually recorded the interview back on February 8th of 2022, but who can remember what was in the episode? I was there and I didn't even remember until I re-listened. I knew it was a great one, but I went back, listened, and recut it a little bit. If you do want to get an update from Vivi, you could check out the latest interview with her, which is on a brand new podcast, Jump In Feet First with Amberly Grant. She's the founder of FinTalks, and Amberly is a frequent guest host with me here on Mile High Fi when Carl is out of the office, which he's actually out of the office for a little while. He has unlimited PTO and I approved his request. So he's out of the office for a little while. So definitely check out Amberly's new show. She launched it out of my podcast Accelerator, as well as Mark over at Mark's Money Mind. So a couple cool shows coming out of the Accelerator. Also, if you want to connect with Vivi, she's awesome and super friendly, you could follow along with her via Instagram. It's over at Vivi Tron, and we'll link up so you can get to all the links that I just mentioned. Vivi posts all the time. It's entertaining, informative, and fun. And it's one of the few platforms where I participate on social media, and I watch Vivi's reels all the time. Before I send it to the show, thanks to GhostBed for sponsoring this episode. I've been enjoying the new massage topper and portable air pressure massage, and it's like a mattress topper situation. There are 7 preset massage, stretching, and meditation programs. I really enjoy the vibration settings, which should come to no surprise to folks out there, and it kind of really calms me down. It's not for the reasons that you are thinking. I don't know if Carl has checked it out, but I think he will also enjoy the vibration features. He enjoys many different devices that vibrate, and that sounds much worse than I meant it to, but the air pressure massage has a cooling cover and patented cooling ghost ice technology, and actually when you lay on it, it feels cool to the touch. It's very nice. And GhostBed has a wide range of mattresses, bed frames, and other sleep accessories like pillows and sheets and really anything you need to help you sleep. If you're optimizing your sleep and you're thinking of upgrading your mattress, definitely check out their mattresses. You can take the free 3-minute quiz to find out which one might work best for you. And you can save 50% site-wide if you go to ghostbed.com/milehighfi. Let's get to the episode. This is the Mile High Fi podcast with Carl Jensen and Doug Cunnington. We have authentic conversations about the journey to Fi, health, happiness, and some very odd tangents. We interview Fi experts, side hustlers, people on their way to Fi, and those who have reached the other side. Join us every week, and if you want the show notes and links and all that other stuff, head over to milehighfi.com.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Mile High Fi podcast. I am Carl Jensen with...
I'm Doug Cunnington.
And we have a very special guest today. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Hi, I'm Vivi. I do all sorts of stuff, but I'm most known for working for Personal Finance Club.
Awesome. And I have something from your Instagram that I want to read out kind of as your intro.
Okay.
1 year ago, I quit my job as a senior quality engineer because I wanted more from life and I wanted a better balance between money, work, and happiness. I loved personal finance, but I had no one to share this enthusiasm with. So I started making videos about it, even though I didn't feel like I had the authority to do so. And my voice is monotone AF.
Yeah.
We'll explore that. Going back, before you know it, I was working full-time for my hero, Personal Finance Club, and that is Jeremy over there. So if people haven't followed Personal Finance Club, we'll put a link so you can check it out. You were welcomed into the community, and you made a bunch of new friends, both creators and non-creators, who appreciate personal finance and inspire me to be better. This is amazing, and we're going to dig into your story.
And awesome. Thank you.
You quit your job a few years ago to get out of a toxic work environment. Can you tell the story of putting in your resignation? Were you scared, stressed out? How did you feel before and after quitting?
Yeah. Well, full disclosure, I quit my job multiple times, but the first time was in 2017. I just felt like I was in this endless cycle of work, 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 hate my life. And then on the weekends, I would go hard and drink a lot to like have something to look forward to and forget about my problems. I wanted to stop that because I felt like working in an environment that I was unhappy in, I did not want to be an engineer. The environment was not great or supportive. And I was thinking like, do I really want to climb the corporate ladder to, you know, have even more responsibilities and more stress, you know, just to have a bigger paycheck, right? Like, what do I really need this bigger paycheck for? And is that really going to make me happy, you know, in exchange for having all this stress? I decided I am not getting any younger. And now is a time when I don't have any responsibilities to take a risk. I thought about it a lot. It was hard because I was afraid of what my peers would think, what my coworkers would think, and especially what my parents would think.
And then how did you feel after you quit?
I felt liberated and also scared shitless at the same time. It was a relief to be like, oh, I don't have to work at this crap job anymore. But after that, it was like, oh shit, what do I do now? I'm not making any money. I don't know how I'm going to make money. I don't have the confidence in myself to make it happen. The disappointment from people. Yeah, it was a lot.
And then how did you quit? Did you like email? Did you have a meeting? What did you do specifically?
It was not that exciting, honestly. I just told my manager, like, I'm planning on quitting soon. It's not you. I mean, sure, I hated it. But like, even if I did love that job, I said, it's time for me to go off on my own. I want to work for myself, and now's the time to do it. And yeah, they were supportive. So it was nice.
I have a couple of follow-up questions about your job. How long did you work there for?
At the job that I quit at.
Yeah, and total, how long had you been working as an aerospace engineer?
I was at that job for like 1.5 years, but in total, like since graduating from college, I was an engineer for 4 years.
Okay. And what specifically did you dislike about the job?
Well, first of all, I did not want to study engineering in college. I wanted to study graphic design, but you know, pressure from my parents and being practical, okay, I'll do the practical thing. That's fine. But I would say like your expectations in college as an engineer are not fulfilled in the working world. You know, you think you're gonna innovate and work on interesting technologies that will change the world. But in reality, you know, you are just kind of like a worker bee pushing papers, you know, doing very repetitive work. And on top of that, I didn't feel like I was improving the world. I was just there to help this company make money. Like, it was only about money, you know, like, it was very stressful. And it's not like, oh, we're like saving lives, you know, it's like, oh, because we need to hit our numbers this month. So I didn't think it was worth it.
Yeah, I've read a couple of books about SpaceX. And Elon Musk is not a pleasant person to work for. And you work very, very long and difficult hours there. But people love it because, for the reasons you said, they aren't pushing paper and they aren't trying to make money. They are making a difference. These people are designing engines and their work is very meaningful. One final question. So you said you only worked for about 4 years after school, after getting your degree. I think about the sunk cost you spent that time in school. Someone spent money to have you go to school. Was it hard to bail on that? I spent all this time getting my degree and I only worked for as much time as it took me to get the degree. I'm going to leave all that behind.
Yeah, that's a great question. I definitely felt a lot of guilt. You know, as much as I wanted to live my own life and make my own decisions, my parents were very, very disappointed in me to the point where my dad did not talk to me or look at me for a few months. And it hurt me a lot because I totally understand why he feels that way. You know, they sacrificed a lot to give me a good life. They didn't have the luxury of being able to pursue their dreams. They paid for me to go to college. So I felt like it was being disrespectful to, like, you know, like, just give up all that they did and sacrifice for me to have this great future. Yeah, that was weighing on me, you know, and at the same time, like, I am here trying to, like, do business and hustle, you know, like, while having that, like, on my shoulders made it much more difficult.
When you quit, how much of a plan did you have for what you were going to do to earn money or just in general?
So I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur of some sort. Like, I love watching Shark Tank, but I never really had an idea that I was passionate about to, like, pursue. So I came across this ad on Facebook, and it's these two women who started traveling and they quit their jobs and they did graphic design and social media management, and they were able to work while traveling. So they sell a course that teaches you how to do that. And I signed up for that course. I took the course after I quit. But, you know, as I told you, I like graphic design. I knew I was good at it. So I decided I can start by selling graphic design services because at least that's something I know how to do. So I was going to start from there.
And then actually, I'm going to be really out of order here. When you started college, did you know that you didn't want to do engineering then already?
Well, okay. In high school, I am Asian. It's very common that you need to be good at math. And I was very good at it. And I did enjoy it, you know, like the critical thinking. I loved physics. But I was also very artsy. I loved design. I was making websites in middle school. So I was like, should I do graphic design or engineering? I decided, hey, there's a compromise. There's architecture. So I actually went to school studying architecture at first. But turns out I feel like it was neither graphic design nor engineering. It's like its own very unique thing. It's a beautiful field, but I don't think my heart was in it. And you have to be very passionate about architecture to succeed in that. Yeah, so I wanted to switch, went back to square one. Okay, graphic design or engineering? And I was set on graphic design because that's what I truly loved to do at the time. But, you know, my parents were like, no, that is not happening. And I was like, okay, I get it. You don't need a degree in graphic design to pursue that. So I was like, okay, I'll just study engineering. And if I really want to be a graphic designer, I can still do that. So I would say engineering was kind of like my backup plan. Like I still had a part-time job as a graphic designer while studying engineering. And that was my plan. But I think eventually I ended up getting an engineering internship in college, and it was like very fulfilling to me. Surprisingly, I had no idea that would happen. And after that moment, I didn't feel the desire to be a graphic designer anymore, because I actually felt like I was helping people and changing lives.
Wow. Why do you think you felt that way? Because it seems like, yeah, most of the engineers that I know, they don't feel that way. So what was it with that particular job that tricked you?
I think about that. I think I was in a special case because I was an intern and I wasn't doing like day-to-day work. They kind of brought me in kind of like as a consultant. Hey, what can we do to improve our, you know, shop floor, our systems? So that's not like a long-term thing that you do on a day-to-day basis. Since I was only there for a short time, I was there to make improvements, which was a lot of fun. But as a full-time job, I don't think that would be feasible.
Makes sense. Okay, I'm going to jump ahead in the story here. So now you work with Jeremy at Personal Finance Club. What's Jeremy's last name? I forget.
Schneider.
Great.
Hi, Jeremy, if you're listening.
So this is your quick story from one of the posts, and it's okay. There's salary information here. Is it okay if I say these?
Yes.
Okay. So you didn't love your job as a quality engineer in the aerospace industry making $85,000. So you quit the job and you were afraid to tell your parents. You studied content creation, graphic design, and video editing. Then you landed a part-time job with Jeremy making $25 an hour. And then you got promoted to a full-time role. In your first year, you made $127,000. And part of that is a profit share, which was $71,000. Is that all accurate? Did I read that right?
Yes.
So that's amazing. That's pretty crazy. So now looking back, I mean, do you have any thoughts about really about how you felt when it was uncertain and then where you are now? Because I'm sure at the beginning you were like, how the fuck is this going to work out? Am I even going to be able to make like $40,000 a year? And now you've done better. Probably, I mean, I suspect you would have had to keep working at that same job for another 15 years to hit what you're making now. So how did it feel?
Not 15 years, by the way. By the way, I didn't mention this, but I came back as an engineer 2 years ago. They asked me to come back and I was like, hell no. But then I was like, I also need money, so I'll come back. And I was making $55 an hour there, which is great, which would be six figures if I was working full time. But back to your question. Yeah, you know, like looking back in hindsight, it's, oh, wow, that was totally worth it. But at the time, I didn't know what the hell was going to happen in my future. I was like struggling with money, taking money out of my savings to pay for rent. I think the hard thing about working for yourself is that you don't have a direction. There's so many different options and things you can pursue, right? So I tried a bunch of things. I started an Etsy shop. I started a blog. I even was doing IT for a client at one point. Yeah. But like, I think now looking back, I think it was necessary to try all those things and fail, if you want to put it that way. Because I say, you know, if even if something doesn't work out, it pushes you closer into the direction that you want to end up in, right? And it sucks to say that you don't really know what's going to happen and you don't really know if things are going to be worth it until that opportunity comes and it like, it's okay. Now it finally paid off, you know, all the risks and sacrifices.
Were you happy during that time of uncertainty, and how long did you have to go before you landed on your feet?
I was not happy during that time because it was very scary. You know, it sucks in many ways, you know, not just financially, but people's outside opinions. People don't really understand and they're not very supportive of things that are different. People would say I am unemployed or I'm like not working, but it's like, no, I am working. I'm just not making money. I lost a lot of confidence. I think what's very interesting about having a conventional job, it's like, it's very easy to have to value yourself, like, oh yeah, like I'm an engineer, I'm worth something, and people are like, wow, that's so cool, they respect you automatically just because of that, you know. But if I'm like, yeah, I'm like trying to work on being an entrepreneur, you know, like they're like, oh okay, you know, it doesn't sound as great and people don't respect that.
What do you say you do now when someone's, hey, what do you do? And it's not a crowd where they would understand like the actual answer. Yeah. So how do you describe what you do?
I say I work for a personal finance brand and we teach people how to invest for retirement.
That's a pretty good answer. People understand that.
Yeah. It's pretty weird, back to what you said a second ago, how at least here in America, I don't know if the rest of the world is like that. It probably is, how our identities are so wrapped up in what we do and our job. And it seems like kind of a flaw. Why should that matter so much? But on the same level, there's a lot of value in not giving a shit in what anyone thinks about you or what you're doing, as long as you're happy and living a life true to yourself. Who cares?
Yeah. But I think it's very hard to not let other people's opinions get to you.
And that leads me to one of the question. So you talked about your parents and the pressure. What about your friends and your peers, especially people that like you didn't work with necessarily? And I some people, they're good friends with their team at work and they hang out outside of work. And I don't know what your situation was, but yeah, how was it with the peers? Did you get support?
It was a mixed bag. Some people were like, oh, wow, you're an entrepreneur. You're killing it. That's so cool. Which was very nice to hear. But deep down, I didn't accept those words because I knew I was struggling and I didn't feel confident enough in myself to accept that. But, you know, it ranged to people saying that I'm unemployed and I'm not working. Most people didn't understand why I was doing that. Yeah. So I don't know. It was very mixed. It did not help, to be honest. Regardless of what people said, it did not help me.
And then, do you have any theories why engineers and IT professionals really hate their jobs?
Yeah, like I said, we have this expectation that we're going to change the world and innovate, which, you know, some professions do have, but I don't think that's very easy to get to that point. Once you do start working in that field, you are pushing a lot of papers and doing very repetitive work in a very fast-paced, toxic environment that's all about profits.
Carl, why did you hate your job so much?
Yeah, I have one theory and I'd be curious to know what you think. And this kind of builds on what Vivi said. I think most engineers and most computer folks actually like their core work. But especially as you advance, you're always shoved into management or you end up doing stuff that's outside of the core job. Like I loved writing code. That part was great. But all the other bullshit, the meetings and micromanagement and schedules, everything that surrounded that was bad, and that stuff grows over time where your coding part might get smaller. Like, oh, we want you to manage a team. Like, oh, like, no, I don't want to. My favorite question is, where do you want to be in like 5 years? Like that question. And deep down, what I wanted to say is I want to be doing the exact same thing I do right now, like in a cube, not talking to anyone else, just coding up the whole day, like the more I'm doing what I do now, the happier I was going to be. But you never wanted to say that because, oh, they expect you to, I see myself as a project architect in 5 years or some bullshit like that. But what do you think, Doug?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think you guys are right. It's different than what people expect most of the time. The kind of work I was doing was like building software for a wireless company. So not saving the world or anything like that. It's pretty dumb stuff. And the politics really sucked. And I guess I'm slightly ambitious. So I wanted to keep doing better. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at the people ahead of me, I thought, well, I definitely don't want to be where they are in 5 years or 10 years. Like, clearly, I don't want to do that. And they don't seem happy either. Yeah. They just seem, they get a little bit more money and they're more stressed out.
So. Yeah, I think it's very interesting how in the corporate world, we like to glamorize like moving up, like you always need to like be pushing to improve or, you know, but why not? Why can't we stay and do the same thing if we are happy with it?
Or putting in like more and more hours, like, oh, this person did like 14 hours and worked over the weekend. It's like, well, they're really inefficient. And how can you work for more than 8 hours anyway? I think I was telling you I can work about 2 or 3 hours a day of like good work. Mm-hmm. And then after that, my brain's too tired. I really can't get much done.
Yeah. If only, you know, corporate America adopt that work schedule.
Yeah. 2 to 3 hours a day. That's perfect. So let's move on to when you quit and you're starting to create some stuff online. You mentioned you tried several things that kind of worked. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious if, looking back, if there's anything that you would change, any mistakes in that process of like quitting and then transitioning to try to figure out what you were going to do?
Wow, that's a good question. I don't know. Part of me wants to say to not get so distracted and like jump from one thing to another or try new things so quickly, because, you know, that does get in the way of your long-term goals. But at the same time, I do feel like it was kind of necessary in order for me to get to where I am. But I think the biggest thing would be to not let your income determine your self-worth, because I feel like I let that affect me so easily and so quickly. Like, it's like, you know, one moment I'm making nothing and all of a sudden, you know, when I got called back to that engineering job making $55 an hour, I was like, I felt like on top of the world, like, oh yeah, like I'm the shit. Like, I got all this money. I don't think money should define you so easily in that way, because at the end of the day, you are still the same person who is capable of the same things. And I really let it get to me when I wasn't making money.
It's cool that they called you back. So you must have been a smart and good employee.
Yeah, that was a huge ego boost, not going to lie.
My company never called me back, by the way, in all these years. So
because they knew you would say no.
They must have heard some of the podcasts we do. Okay, so what was it like going back to being a beginner after you were a hotshot engineer, you were very qualified, so you're going back to square one, you're taking some courses, trying to figure out how to do kind of entry-level stuff in air quotes.
Yeah, it sucks, you know? Like, it made me rethink, like, wow, I had it pretty good and was living comfortably, and now I am starting over and, like, couponing to save like a dollar here and there, because it was really tough. But I knew in the long run, like, it was the right decision, because I would rather be struggling with my skills and like not making money than staying at that job and struggling in a different way, right? That's the risk that I chose to take. And honestly, I never had the intention or the desire to go back to engineering. Like, if things went to shit, I didn't think of that as an option. That would be like, you know, like rock bottom.
Right.
Wow, that's pretty intense. So you never envisioned a situation. And I, especially now, like now you're probably like, I would never, ever. Is there anything that would cause you to go back to an engineering job? Like,
honestly, I would say that's like the total last resort. Because even that time that I did come back, I didn't want to. It actually was like better than I thought it would be. It was still toxic and crap, but I was only there part-time, so it wasn't as bad. And I could still totally be here today or be there today, but I knew that the time that I was spending there was holding me back from my long-term goals. So I feel like if I were to work in that field, it would just be for money and like a means to achieve something else. So, yeah.
Do you think your life is better now because you had to go through that? Do you think you'd be as appreciative now of your life if you hadn't gone through that tough time, that 4 years of school and a career that you did not like?
I don't regret it at all. Because I think if I didn't do that, I would always wonder, like, what would my life be? Like, would I have enjoyed that? But now I know. And I don't, like, I think my education and that experience was totally worth it. I learned a lot, you know, even though I don't use my engineering skills anywhere, you know. I think I learned, like, how to learn things and how to think critically, you know, and solve problems. So yeah, I think it's fine.
I have one more question along these lines before we take a hard left turn. So did you feel like you like made it or were successful before you started working with Jeremy, or was Personal Finance Club like part of the journey to get to a spot where you feel like confident and comfortable with, you know, earning and your position and where you are in your journey, I guess?
I think getting this job is what kind of made me feel validated and what made it feel like this whole journey was worth it. Because before that, I was struggling and I didn't know what I was doing. And I think it's kind of sad to like require a job or a position or an income to make you feel validated. It's very weird because like I got this job and all of a sudden like people think I'm great and amazing, you know, but it's like, oh, just right before that, it's like I was a nobody and not accomplishing things. So it's just strange that we do need this like external validation to feel good about ourselves and for other people to see that in us as well.
So here's the left turn. You shared on Instagram that you started therapy. So it's cool we talk about this.
Yeah, let's get into that.
So that seems scary to share it. So can you talk about why you felt like it was important to share it on Instagram and really put yourself out there?
Yeah, it is a very personal thing to share. And even somebody told me like, oh, be careful, don't share too much. But what I've realized over the years from like slowly being more vulnerable is that people love it, you know, because a lot of things on social media are fake and curated. People think it's very refreshing to see real shit that they can relate to, then they are probably dealing with similar emotions too. So what I've learned is that being vulnerable gets so much more traction and like a better response from people than whatever superficial stuff out there. So I want to share that with people because it can help them feel seen. But at the same time, when I'm feeling vulnerable or being vulnerable, it helps me too, because people are supportive or they'll share their own story that will help me or share their advice or their tips and stuff. So it's great. It's totally worth it.
And Carla, I don't know. I haven't gone to therapy. Have you gone to therapy? And you could answer or not answer if you feel comfortable.
I have not gone to therapy. I could probably use some of it for some incidents, but no, I have not gone.
Yeah, I probably should go too, which we'll get into that in a second here. But how is therapy going? And feel free to share or not share whatever you want. And what are you looking to get out of therapy?
It's going okay. I've only seen one therapist, so I don't know what to compare it to. But I've had a lot of crying, a lot of realizations, which I think is great because she doesn't tell me what to do or what's going on, but she asks me the right questions for me to realize it on my own, which I think is much more powerful. What am I looking to get out of it? I would say more clarity in terms of the direction that my life is heading. I got problems. We all got problems and we don't know how to handle them, what to do next, right? And she kind of helps me talk it through for me to figure that out on my own. So, you know, I want to be at peace, have a better understanding of myself, why I am the way I am, and how to deal with that.
Was it scary to go for the first session? And I guess it's remote, or is that
right?
Yeah. Okay.
No, it was not scary because I actually posted about it on Instagram and asked people like, oh, how do you find a therapist? You know, and people were super helpful. And I would say 100% of the people that shared their experience about therapy, they're like, it's worth every penny. Like, it changed my life. And I was like, oh, I want to change my life. So yeah, I was very excited. I actually did the session in like a private office space. And I cried so much and I was not prepared. I did not bring any tissues with me. So yeah, I did not think I was going to cry.
Wow. So Carl, are you sold? Are you going to sign up right away?
I don't think I'll sign up right away, but everyone who I know who has gone to therapy has said the exact same thing as Vivi. I'm a better person for it. I know myself better and I'm happier as a result of it. So
what's holding you back then?
I don't know. Writing is kind of therapeutic for me. I like to write, and that's a little therapy session. I know it's not the same as talking to someone.
Well, I'm not your therapist, but I think you just deflected that.
What's holding you back, Doug?
You know what? Nothing. I think maybe this is the push that I need publicly, you know, now that I'm making fun of Carl. I think... Yeah, what I mean, everything that you said, it makes sense to me. And I think, and I'm going to deflect the same way that you did, Carl. I think just me talking to Georgie, the dog, really helps because she never talks back. No, I'm just kidding. That was a bad joke. Okay. Anything else with the therapy stuff that you want to share before we get back on track and start talking about Phi?
I would say, I put it off for a long time, mainly because of the cost. And I do have great friends that are willing to listen to all my problems. You know, Doug has a dog, Carl has a journal. That's great. But I think it's very valuable when there's a professional that knows where to lead the conversation to help you figure out what it is that you need to figure out.
Very good. So how did you get interested in Phi? And can you talk about sort of the timeline when you found it and started investigating and the journey?
Yeah. So a friend of mine told me about Mr. Money Mustache in 2014. He was also an engineer. And it interested me a lot because I was like, yeah, I hate my job and I don't want to be here forever. It's like, wow, there's a way out of this. That's really cool. Count me in because I want to get out of here as soon as I can. Yeah. And I think it was very eye-opening reading Mr. Money Mustache's blog because I did feel like I was spending money recklessly on alcohol and partying just to like have that instant gratification, you know? But I learned that there's another way to use your money for that long-term big picture thing. And that helped me be much more frugal because, you know, it'll be worth it in the end when I can finally leave my job. So yeah, that's how it started.
And did you have any friends? I guess one friend introduced you to the concept, but did you have other friends that were like on that journey? So, or did you sort of have to leave some friends behind because they were going out partying and stuff? And I know exactly what you're talking about. I did consulting and traveled a lot. Mm-hmm. So it was really easy to go party while you're on the road. Mm-hmm. And then when you get back in town, you're like, oh, only I have like 2 days to like do a couple things around the house, laundry, and then, you know, party on the weekends. So yeah, how did that go socially for you?
Yeah, it did not go well with my friends. I was trying to share this concept with them. And most of them were like, I like my job, or like, I don't know what I would do if I wasn't working. And, you know, money is there for you to enjoy life and, you know, buy stuff for people and show them love in that way. So yeah, it was kind of difficult. I didn't really have my friend group who could relate to it. So that did make it difficult, you know, when people are going out to eat and ordering all the appetizers and drinks and stuff. And I'm like, oh no, I don't want all this. I don't want to have to pay for it. So it is kind of weird. And it's kind of embarrassing because like, it sounds like you're poor if you don't want to splurge. But what I've noticed is interesting is like, it's like the cheap people that have more money, even though it seems like, you know, I don't have the money. Yeah, it's interesting.
Did you make pretty good decisions up until that point? Did you have a relatively reasonable car or apartment or home or whatever? Or did you have to like reel things in?
I was pretty reasonable. I drove a very old car. I was living with my parents at the time to save money. So I think because I was doing that, it gave me a little bit more freedom to enjoy life. You know, I love traveling. I think travel is worth the money, you know, being spent on. But if I wasn't living with my parents, I definitely would have changed my lifestyle in order to account for that.
So did you make any changes right after discovering Money Mustache? Did you decide, hey, I have to max out my 401k now, or I have to order water and just a small appetizer at restaurants? Like, do you remember, what was it like black and white?
It was definitely a gradual thing. I didn't exactly max out my 401k, but I got, you know, pretty close to it. Yeah, saved a bunch of money. I think it was kind of tough because at that point I still hated my job and needed that instant gratification, you know, and like needed to have something to look forward to and hold me over until next weekend. So it was a balancing act for sure.
And of course, when you quit your high paying job, that derailed you from this path. So can you talk about that? Like, how much did it get you off track? Did you have a target date in mind? And then you were like, oh fuck, if I quit, I have to change everything and I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Yeah. That was another tough, you know, result of quitting. Like, I was so focused and ready to retire in my 30s. And I was like, you know, should I just keep at it for 10 more years and be good? Or do I drop everything and make $0 and go backwards, push off my retirement until who knows when, in exchange for following my dream? Yeah, that was tough. And I hated every month taking out money that I've been like working hard to save, you know, to pay for rent. But what I realized is that time and our youth is also very valuable. So like now is the time to do it, even if my retirement will be pushed back later, at least I have this time now to explore and go after what it is that I want. And I think that's totally worth it because I would hopefully find a profession that I enjoy. So I'm not in such a rush to retire ASAP.
You're totally fine. I mean, Carl and I, we lost our youth and he didn't even know, or I didn't know about FI until, you know, several years after you're talking about retiring. So you're totally fine. What were you going to say?
I just, along your lines, I think FIRE is kind of a reaction to the old school life that people used to embrace. So I'll go to school, I'll get this job, I'll work my ass off, I'll become a manager, blah, 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 blah. And people are like, screw this, I don't want to do it. But I think a more healthier way to live is just what you said. Find something you actually want to do. Negotiate a loose relationship with it. I'm not going to work 2,200 hours a year or whatever the hell it comes out to. I'm not going to be stuck in shitty commutes. I might take sabbaticals. I might take summers off and be a snowboard instructor in the winter or whatever. Just enjoy life and not race to this end where you don't necessarily have to work. So you want to work, but you're enjoying it and working at things that you truly love and speak to your heart the whole time.
Yeah. And Doug, you were saying that you two lost your youth. What does that mean? And how do you feel, you know, knowing that and where you are today?
It was mostly a joke, but this is going to turn into a therapy session.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Let's do this.
I probably could have made a few better decisions, but generally, I mean, I'm happy where I'm sitting. And this has been a theme for questions along these lines. I'm happy where I'm sitting right now today. So I learned a lot from those mistakes that I made or poor decisions and losing my youth, wasting time working like weekends or shift hours and blah, blah, blah. And I think it was okay. I'm not that old, you know.
Yeah. Plenty of your youth left.
Yeah. What about you, Carl?
Anything? I'm happy. I can't complain about where I am in life, but I worked very, very hard for, I had a full-time job. I was fixing up a house with two kids. So working like over 100 hours a week for weeks on end between this stupid house remodel and other stuff. And I didn't really need to do that. I should have just taken time off. I would talk to friends on the weekends and they'd be like, oh man, did you watch like whatever zombie TV show? Like I haven't turned on the TV in years. It's still in the box from our move 3 years ago. So I don't know what you're talking about. And that was a toxic way to live. But I'm happy. I'm very thankful for where I'm at now and more appreciative of it because I did that shit. Although I am still doing shit now. I've got Band-Aids on my fingers because of home improvement. But
yeah. You like that though.
Sort of.
Okay. So I think we were kind of leading to this question anyway. So how important is the retire early part now that you're out of the toxic work environment? And you didn't tell me that your work environment is not toxic, but I'm just assuming because Jeremy's a cool dude that you're not in a toxic environment right now.
Yeah, that's fair. It is not toxic. Yeah, that's a good point. It is less important to retire early if you have a job that you enjoy, because I feel like many people who are retired early end up still working in some form, right? So I don't think FIRE is like an end goal, because, you know, it's like the beginning. Life still goes on. You're still, yeah, I mean, I'm still hoping to retire early, but it's not as much of like, it doesn't feel as urgent as it did before.
Very good. So you're starting to go to more FI and personal finance events. We met at Economy, which was pretty fun.
Yeah.
How would you describe the community? And I mean, who have you met? You know, any cool people or anything like that?
I got to meet Carl Jensen and Doug Cunnington. Hello. Yeah,
that's right.
It says that right there on the. Oh, yeah. Never mind.
it's been really cool. I think it's a very unique community in the sense that you don't need to compete. Everybody can win. People are very understanding. You know, you can be in different parts of your journey and, you know, it's okay. I like that. I feel like the community is very genuine and authentic, which I think is cool. You know, it's like, it's so interesting to me meeting like normal looking dudes like you two and like finding out like, oh yeah, I'm retired. Like, I just got a bunch of money, but I just look like a normal person. I think that's great and very refreshing because you do meet people that like have very flashy clothes and cars and stuff, but they're probably maybe struggling financially. Who knows? But yeah, it's great. I feel very welcomed and feel like I've met a lot of great people.
I want to shift a little bit. So travel, you mentioned it as one of your priorities, something that you really want to spend time doing. So can you talk about some of the travel that you've done in the past, maybe some highlights or some recent trips?
I made it a goal to travel to every continent besides Antarctica before I turned 30. So I have accomplished that. Love that. It was great. You know, every continent has so much, it's like so much different from another. So I kind of felt like I've traveled the world, literally. And I think it's great to get out of your bubble and meet people that have had a totally different upbringing from you.
What's a place that you want to go back to that you've been to?
I really love Japan, specifically Tokyo. I love how high-tech they are, how efficient they are, how polite they are, how cute all their stuff is, like how much like detail and effort they put into just like packaging and like small things. Yeah, it was very beautiful. I loved it.
Awesome. That's a bucket list for me. I've never been, but I can't wait to go.
Yeah, you have to. It's amazing.
And then do you have any upcoming trips?
No, but you know, since I can work remotely, I kind of want to try out this nomad thing, you know, maybe like live here for a month and then live somewhere else for a month. So I would probably want to start in the US first, just for convenience and time zone reasons. So I think that's my next thing. You know, that's why I'm here in Denver, actually. I'm staying here for a month, watching a house. It's been really cool to just have a different change of pace and get the experience of living somewhere, not so much like traveling and doing stuff all the time. I really like that a lot. I like, you know, the slow travel kind of thing. Next is probably Seattle. I would want to spend some time there.
Very cool. Yeah, I think the slow travel and spending like a month is just about a month at a minimum, because then you don't feel rushed to go and like do all the stuff. You can sit around and waste some time, which is nice.
Yeah. And I really prefer to have the experience of living there, you know, like what is it like to, you know, live in a real house, or like what do they have at the grocery store, or what is it like taking public transportation, stuff like that.
And then the other bonus area is social media. So we've referenced several times your Instagram account, and I don't know what other social stuff you have going on, but we have had other conversations where we've talked about social media being a mixed bag. Can you talk about that and like how you create, how you consume, and like why you take breaks occasionally or that sort of thing?
Yeah, I have a love-hate relationship with social media. I love creating and I hate it at the same time. I think it's a great way to spread a message and connect with people and inspire people, change people's lives. But on the other hand, it comes with a lot of pressure. like, oh, you gotta post like every day or every week or else the algorithm will not like you and they'll like hide your content. It's hard to be creative because you can't force yourself to create and come up with new ideas. So it does get very draining. And, you know, of course, the backlash you might get from people is never fun. So, yeah, sometimes I want to quit, but I'm like, no, I can't because it's great. It's done great things for me. I've met a lot of amazing people, got really cool opportunities, and I've been able to inspire people, which is what I want to do. But it does come with a lot of pressure and baggage.
When you do take a break and potentially the algorithm hates you after that, are you able to just come back and everything's fine like after a couple of weeks? Like has there been any like actual negative effects? It just, or does it just feel like there will be?
Honestly, I don't like, I try not to care anymore. Yes, I do lose followers for not posting. And it hurts. It used to hurt me a lot every time, like, oh, the numbers keep going down. Yeah. But, you know, I learned to get over that because at the end of the day, what is more important is my personal life and my mental health. So that's a priority. And whatever happens on social media is like secondary.
Good. Okay, so what is a perfect day or a few days or a week or however, whatever interval you want to talk about? What does that look like for you?
A perfect day. Well, I am a night owl, so my perfect day would be waking up at 10 o'clock and taking it easy, you know, spending some time to myself, making a slow breakfast. I really like spending time with people. So honestly, my perfect day would just be like hanging out with people who I really connect with and can inspire me. And we don't even have to do anything interesting. You know, we could be going to the grocery store and just like talking about life. That's something that I really love. And I would want to, you know, do something productive, learn something, work on a class, and maybe at night, you know, I'm down for drinking. Great conversations are had when you're drinking with great people. So it'd be cool to chill at home and have a good conversation, maybe do some karaoke and play some board games. Yeah, that sounds like a great day to me.
Nice. That sounds doable. Grocery store, hang out, drink a little. Yeah, you could do that.
And what activities make you lose track of time?
Honestly, posting on social media makes me lose track of time. That could be a good way or a bad way.
Yeah.
But when I'm posting, when I'm making my fun stories or insightful stories, whatever, I do put a lot of thought into it. Maybe record a few takes, make sure it looks good. I enjoy doing that. And then I get a lot of great messages and a lot of great conversations are started. And yeah, I am like texting back and forth, like with strangers. And before you know it, like 6 hours have gone by. Yeah, I enjoy it.
And I'm curious, with graphic design or like more artistic things, do you also lose track of time?
Yes, I do, but not in the sense of enjoying it. You know, it's like, oh crap, why am I spending so much time on this? Like just looking at trying to move an image like one pixel up or down for 30 minutes trying to decide what looks better. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. So I have one final question that I also didn't prep you for.
Oh.
Don't worry. You'll do fine. So for people that are still working a job that they potentially hate, especially, I mean, just think back of yourself when you were doing the engineering job and you were like, all these sunk costs, my parents may be disappointed if I quit, and just all the things that are keeping you from quitting. Like, what advice would you give a person now?
Wow. It's tough. I get that you gotta take care of your bills. Maybe you got other people depending on you. But I would say to look at your life in the long run, and what do you really want? Are you willing to make a short-term sacrifice now to potentially find your passion and your dream job? Because I think life is very precious, and we spend so much time working, and life goes by very quickly if you're wasting time doing something that you don't want to do. So, you know, you don't have to quit your job completely like I did. But, you know, if you can make some sacrifices and work towards it and get into it, maybe, you know, do it part-time on the side or get some new skills that you enjoy, I totally support that.
Great answer. Well, Vivi, this has been awesome. And where should people find you?
Thank you for having me. You can find me on Instagram at VVTron, and you can see what I'm doing for work at Personal Finance Club.
Awesome. We'll link everything up so you could find it easily. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks again to Vivi for joining us on the show. Be sure to follow her over on Instagram. Again, we'll put a link to all the stuff I mentioned, including her Instagram profile. And thanks a lot for checking out the episode. If you like it, definitely leave us a review out there. We get a lot of negative reviews, which, you know, we don't love to get that. A lot of times it's about how we cuss sometimes. And people don't like that very much. So it's great if you enjoy the show and you actually enjoy that we cuss and we talk how we normally might talk. Leave us a review. It's nice to get a positive one every now and then. Carl and I don't look at them too often, but I'm on an email sort of summary, so I will see the reviews when they come through. And I'm not saying it makes me sad when a bad review comes in, but it doesn't make me happy. I'll put it that way. I have pretty thick skin. But anyway, leave a positive review. And if you don't like it, you could leave an honest review as well. But positive reviews are cool. You could say what you like about the show, what you like about Carl, what you like about me, or maybe the guests. And if you don't like it, I mean, I have a lot of suggestions about that. I mean, Carl and I are hypercritical of ourselves, unfortunately. I feel like I'm rambling now. So we'll just end it here. And thanks for listening to the show.
Okay. How long have you been in town for?
Almost 2 weeks.
Okay. Have you been to Denver before?
I have, but only for like a weekend, so it's very short.
Yeah, now you're here in the winter, which is, you're coming from Southern California to Denver.
Yeah, it's not as horrible as I thought it would be. You know, it's like not bad if you just go from your house to the car in the cold. Yeah. It's fine.
You did show up for the crazy snowstorm, though.
Oh, was that a crazy storm? It was beautiful.
It got cold. It got very cold afterwards, which is pretty unusual. So the question I have prepared for the sound check, and we usually put this at the end so people have like bloopers, sort of a guilty pleasure song or artist or some kind of music that you're embarrassed that you listen to.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, thanks for telling me ahead of time.
Do you have one, Carl?
Yes, it took me a second. And there's many, many, probably most of the music I listen to is embarrassing to divulge in public. But I would say all that shitty 80s hair band like Warrant, Motley Crue.
Poison.
Poison, Slaughter. Yeah, all those bands.
Love that.
The men who looked like women at the time, that was the style.
Yeah. Yeah, those were great. I like those too.
How about you, Doug?
So mine is like mid to late 90s, like women rockers. I don't even, like Alanis Morissette. It's pretty good. Like Jagged Little Pill, solid album. Did you not get into that?
I did at first, but then it was just played so much. Like, what was her big song, the Go Down on You in a Theater song. Like that song was like on the radio. Like it was every other fucking song. And that song was actually written by a man, which is kind of strange. Go Down on You.
You ought to know.
Theater. Yeah. Theater part. Yeah, that's it. You ought to know. I ought to know.
Vivi, did we buy you enough time?
Yeah. I'm not like totally embarrassed, but it's unexpected of me. People have told me, but I am a huge BTS fan. You guys know BTS? It's a K-pop group.
Okay.
It's mostly, you know, teenagers that love them. So, you know, it's okay.
That's from Korea, right?
Yes.
I've heard of that. What do they actually sound like? I don't know if I've ever heard them sing or play. Or do they play instruments or is it
No, they're like a boy band, singing and dancing, very, you know, teenage pop vibes, mostly in Korean. Huh. I don't understand it. But it's great.
We should check it out, Doug.
Yeah, we should. Something we'll get into as well.